Welcome to Attack of Opportunity.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Attack of Opportunity, where we take the chance to interview, well, lately we've been interviewing content creators. We've even done a little hands across the water, some international action. And today we are actually reaching out to fellow Pathfinders, those in the community that are making content for audio, video, podcasting, book writing, any Pathfinder-y creator we can get our hands on. And I have the very, very fortunate and distinct pleasure today to talk to the man from Maximum Pew Pew, Jared Bailey. Jared, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Jeff, thank you for having me. I certainly appreciate it. How are you doing today?
Oh, not bad, not bad. So, you know, well, perhaps this is a small show. Maybe you don't know. But the question we like to ask everyone, every victim we get in the chair, for starters, is how did you first know that you were a geek, a nerd, one of us, one of us?
Pretty good question. Probably about middle school when people started to be very free with those terms and think that they were derogatory in some way. But, you know, the geeks and the nerds were actually the nice people you wanted to hang out with. So I quickly realized, okay, that's not as derogatory as they think it is. So yeah, probably about 12, 13 years old was when I started to get there and really embrace that particular term.
Well, I certainly don't mean any offense when I use the term geek or nerd or whatever. It's a self-reflecting joke. I know the further back you go, it can be a little offensive. But honestly, I find you can't use any term today without pissing somebody off. So I'm just trying to own it. So my next question for you, sir. Was there a defining moment for you or a gateway drug, like a video game, cosplay, card games or something that, you know, really got you into the genre of fantasy, sci-fi and beyond the RPG world?
Lord, I got a Nintendo or NES when I was about 5 years old, and I don't think I've put it down since in the past like 30 years. So video games.
There are newer systems, just so you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that's the one I kind of always come back to. So video games have always been like my medium of choice, and that kind of got me interested in other mediums. I grew up in small town West Virginia. We didn't have any comic book stores. We didn't have any game stores. There was no miniatures or anything. So really, that was it. Like, you could go to KB's or you could go to Walmart or something. You could get yourself a video game, and that's what you had until we started to become a little bit more cosmopolitan and get more stores and, you know, branch out a little bit. You would think that living close to sort of like college campuses that there would be more availability of this stuff. So I talk with people and I feel like I missed out because, like, I didn't have an ability to purchase a comic book. So, like, you know, all this new media and stuff's like, I don't know. Like, I just sort of a pariah in that sense. But no, it's always been video games. It still is video games. And that was kind of the gateway into everything. And I feel like I still use video games as kind of an inspiration for some of the homebrew stuff I do with some of my games.
Okay, cool. Cool. So you say, like, you've been going on this for a while. How long have you been a gamer?
Well, I will be probably close to 30 years now. I mean, I know that I probably had some type of infatuation with them before I got my first NES, but, you know, seriously, probably about 30 years at this point.
Wow. you're encroaching upon my territory now. With you're playing, you know, you're in West Virginia, you're playing a video game or whatever. What got you into the RPG, the role-playing game aspect, whether it was through video game or otherwise?
I'm trying to think of the very first RPG that I probably played. I can't think of any on NES. It is probably either Final Fantasy, a Chrono Trigger, even Pokemon would have been a really good, like, gateway role-playing game. But those were probably the ones that I first got into as far as, like, RPGs are concerned. Probably my first taste of an actual pen and paper RPG was, there was a few friends in middle school whose older brother ran AD&D, so I was kind of getting, like, this third-hand experience of all these, like, Dungeons & Dragons stories, and, you know, I was able to play, like, this one shot. Nobody knew what they were doing. It was 12-year-olds trying to replicate AD&D without rule books or anything, so, like, that was kind of, like, my first experience with actual, like, pen and paper role-playing games. And it wasn't a negative experience, but it certainly was a little bit unorthodox.
Okay. sorry, I'm having a little trouble this morning.
No, it's that time of year.
Yeah, that's pardon me. So, a geek, a nerd, a gamer. This is not uncommon in today's gaming age. But now, the big question, what made you decide to start making your own content, putting something out there, sharing your game with the world to become a content creator on the web?
So as far as the podcast, this came hand in hand with the launch of Starfinder, which was a Paizo's foray into sort of the sci-fi universe. And I know you talk a lot of with people about Pathfinder. So mm-hmm. for those that aren't familiar with Starfinder, Starfinder released August 2017 at Gen Con. And as much as I like fantasy, I like sci-fi like even more. That's a bit more of my jam. So, you know, Pathfinder kind of got me into this hobby, but Starfinder is really where like my interest lied. And I was all in with the launch, and I wanted to run Dead Suns, which was the first adventure path that Paizo was putting out for Starfinder. And I've had so many live games kind of fizzle out. You know, we get through a book and, you know, life happens or whatever. So Maximum Pew Pew was actually an accountability project that's like, okay, where I'm going to force myself to run through these books, and I'm going to have the entirety of the internet keep me accountable because I'm going to be putting out episodes of this so other people can listen. Also, I came from probably 99% of my experience with Pathfinder was with the Pathfinder Society organized play campaign. So for those that are not familiar, it allows people to kind of jump in and jump out of games. There's a continuous storyline, but you don't have to play with the same four or five or six people at the table every single week. So, you know, you can drop in every week, every month, you know, every couple of months, and you're going to be able to find a table with people to play with. And yeah, I was GMing a lot. I'm actually a five-star Pathfinder Society GM, so I've got a lot of GMing experience under my belt. And every single time I came to the table, I was sharing a story with up to six other people. And I loved that. Like, you know, all the time that I was investing multiplied by six for the amount of enjoyment that people were getting out of it. And now I'm kind of replicating that same experience with the podcast and getting way more than one table's worth of listeners at every single session. So it kind of replicates that enjoyment and that thrill that I got out of doing a society GMing as well.
Yeah, it's addictive once you get going. I know. Now, just to be clear, you're talking about the Pathfinder Society is at your local gaming store. It's a way of playing instant D&D, playing instant Pathfinder, where you bring registered characters, and like you said, Jared here is a registered DM, and Paizo puts out these. I like to, like, they look like a sort of a fantasy version of like a James Bond pulp fiction. There's lots of politics, quick action. There's always some fights in there. Always got to think, always got to use your skill set, you know, that kind of thing. You always got to, and it's not like the heroes fight the dragon kind of thing. It's, I really like how they use a lot of factions and politics and dirty corporations, yeah, as it were, and shipping companies and this kind of thing are the bad guy. And, you know, like you said, you're in and out and the players get their boons and they advance their characters. And then they can come to another gaming store or get into another session with another DM and pick up where they left off, or, you know, the DM says, I'm running this part of this adventure, and they have a chance to, you know, advance, as opposed to the online aspect where you can go to Fantasy Grounds, you can go to Roll20 and stuff and jump in those games. I just wanted to clarify that for you, but no, that's great, man. Like, good for you. So was there a specific inspiration for you for the sci-fi side to pick Starfinder, or to like to get into that type of podcast? Was there someone, like, I understand you're already doing so, like, the private sector, or, you know, you're going from game shop to game shop and you want to get it bigger and get on the net. Where was there someone, a streamer or a YouTuber or something that you were exposed to, or a podcaster, and it just clicked for you? Starfinder's coming and you're like, I could do that just the way these people are, and, you know, made you choose the podcast over video or that kind of thing. Was there an inspiration? Was there somebody out there that really sold it to you? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Podcasts were attractive because I have to commute quite a bit for work. So when I was in school, I had to do these internships all around the state. And I was driving as much as an hour each way, and I needed some entertainment. And in rural West Virginia, if you don't like country music, then you might as well just turn the radio off. So I turned to podcasts, and one that I really enjoyed was back when Penny Arcade's Acquisitions Incorporated was starting off, way before it was actually, you know, video streams and at PAX East, PAX West, all these places. Before we had the C-Team, we had the podcast. And you know, that was kind of my way in. I could listen to these stories on the way to work, and, you know, it gave me something to enjoy on those hour commutes back and forth. And that was kind of my inspiration. I still follow Acquisitions Incorporated. I still follow C-Team. Those are probably my two favorites that are online right now that I like to watch. And I feel like I've taken a lot of inspiration from Jerry Holkins as a GM. I enjoy his GMing style. So I feel like I get a lot of inspiration from that. But I didn't really feel like the video aspect. I feel like there's a little bit more anonymity with the audio, especially if I'm inviting some of my friends to be able to do this. So audio itself seemed to be the medium. Plus, where I commute, that's what I was able to listen to the most. So, I mean, it spoke to me personally as well.
Yeah, that's what you were exposed to. The Penny Arcade inspires you. I remember when Penny Arcade first came out. I wish I'd taken it more seriously back in the day. I'd spoken in an interview about listening to the Sunday Night Funnies and Dr. Demento when Weird Al Yank first came out, and they were running George Carlin at night, like the comedian aspect. And then in the 90s, Penny Arcade popped up, and I saw it, I listened to it, and I didn't really know what it was, and I'd moved on. You know, something else. My kids were small, and I really wish I had sort of paid more attention. Went, oh, I get this. You know, got into this sort of earlier, because as any content creator will tell you, it's exhausting, and we're having the time of our lives. It is so much fun.
Yeah,
it's such a rush. So you talked about your crew, your cast. So where do you create your content from? Do you have a live studio? Do they come to the house? Are you mics around the table? You know, with the pate? Are you in your kitchen room, living room? Have you set up a studio? Or do you do the online thing like we do, where you're in a Zoom call and everyone's all over the place and you're trying to record at one end or the other?
So pretty much 100% of our gaming content is recorded about 20 feet over there. So I'm in the...
right over there.
Yeah. So I'm in the basement of my house right now, and I've got this nook that wasn't really good for anything. It was carpeted. It's well lit. And I treated it with some blackout curtains to absorb some of the sound. I was able to put some tables there, and it's a nice dedicated space for us to be able to do our gaming. All the players are people that I've met through our local organized play campaign. I'm not afraid to say I'm in the Charleston, West Virginia area. And I think we have probably one of the best Pathfinder and Starfinder lodges in the country. You can fight me about that. Three going on five-star game masters. We run Eyes of the Ten an average of 1 to 2 times a year. We're running 4 tables weekly of Pathfinder and Starfinder. We have a lot of sessions coming through there. And a lot of that success has come from a lot of people willing to be game masters. So when we run Starfinder or when we run Pathfinder at our tables, I'm not the only GM at that table. There's at least 3 other people with as much GMing experience or more as me. So it's nice to not have to rely on myself as being the rules master. Everyone there is super seriously. So
GMs make the absolute best and worst players at the same time.
And I can see that dichotomy, but thankfully everything has gone pretty smoothly. So the cadre of players that I selected for our first, you know, our Dead Sons adventure path, 3 of them were ground level Starfinder GMs. One of them was experienced with Pathfinder but hadn't touched Starfinder yet and doesn't have any game mastering experience. But there is so much experience at this table with this game system. One of the major complaints people have with Starfinder is starship combat. Everyone there knows the rules, like backwards and forwards. There's no struggle. I don't have to race through the rule book. Somebody knows what their role is at which position of the starship. And I mean, it's so snappy.
It keeps the flow going. We recently started live streaming and recording video as opposed to audio, and it really shakes you up. There is no, oh, hang on a second, we'll just edit this out and look something up, and then you can edit the audio later, or, you know, if there's something you're live streaming, you're just looking at the camera going, and you look this up and we'll talk about this, and, you know, you got to keep it going.
Yeah, you have to delegate a little bit more. But my current setup, I use a Zoom LiveTrack L12 to digitally record all the audio. I've got some basic Behringer microphones on all the player positions and an Audio Technica AT2020 on the GM position. We can support up to 7 people at the table, and that's more a physical constraint of the space versus the limitations of the actual equipment that we're using.
Okay.
I take the audio, edit it with Kakos's Reaper DAW software, which is amazing. Please look into it if you're looking to upgrade your audio editing game. But everything we do is live because all of my players, all of my GMs, everyone was in this area.
Hang on, let me stop you there. Okay, so this is something that works for you, right?
Right.
A lot of us out there use the free software, Audacity, myself included. So could you tell us a little bit, like, without shamelessly plugging Reaper, could you tell me something that you enjoy about it, something over someone like Garage or Audacity?
Okay, so I came from Audacity. I probably used it for maybe the first 9 months of the lifespan of Maximum PPU. Sorry, I've got this metal bar here and I keep flicking it. It sounds like a door chime. So apologies for that. So the best way to describe it, Audacity is to MS Paint as Reaper is to Photoshop. So Audacity will get you where you need to go, but a lot of the editing that you do with Audacity is destructive, so you can't get that content back. If you try to do any type of noise canceling or anything like that, it takes about 5 minutes to render, and then, that doesn't sound too great. Undo. Let's try another 5-minute render to see if we can get it where we need to go. Mm-hmm. Reaper, all of these effects are kind of like filters, like you would see in Photoshop, where you can turn them on and off as needed. You can adjust the intensity as needed. Renders, you can kind of set renders up, so after you do your whole workflow and you're done for the night, you can hit the render button, and it can spend the hour it needs to do all your renders, and it's ready for you the next day.
Time saving, you've sold me already, because just so much time invested in editing.
It will save you time. You can set up presets, so when you I've got all of my microphones set up for all of my players, so I know what, one of my players, his name is Matt, I know what Matt's going to sound like. I can get his equalizer stuff set up for his microphone. So that was the other upgrade I made too, was I went from a Zoom H4n, which kind of recorded the whole table in stereo, to individual microphones. So it makes it a lot easier if, somebody sneezes or coughs, or, all these little things that can be destructive and sort of cover up what somebody's saying. Mm-hmm. Now I've got them individualized, and it's a whole lot easier to pick these things out, and I can, edit out this player's cough, and now nobody knows. It just kind of sounds like it's in the background and not like it happened right here. So
No, I understand. I for one take audio quality very seriously. It's an uphill battle when you're trying to do it online. Like I said, there's so many technical issues, and we try so hard to get as much quality out of the limited resource that we have. And then, like you said, there's time. There's so much time, and there's one show as opposed to a plethora of shows, which brings me to my next question. It's a distinct pleasure to meet someone that is going at a sort of a mini network as opposed to a single podcast, and feels my pain. Because you've got the Maximum Pew Pew has like a couple of shows under its banner.
Right. So the main show we have right now is Dead Sons, which is named after the eponymous adventure path released by Paizo for the Starfinder role-playing game. We currently also do a show called Jewel of the South, which uses the Tales from the Loop rule set from Free League and published by Modiphius. Mm-hmm. It is a alternate history 1980s sort of adventure that came out pre-Kids on Bikes, if people have heard of that particular role-playing game, but sort of in the same strain.
It's a Stranger Things kind of ripoff?
Stranger Things, Goonies... Ripoff is a strong statement to make when it came out before Stranger Things.
Sorry.
So, no, it's fine. But anytime I pitch the RPG, I say, if you enjoyed Stranger Things, if you enjoyed Goonies, if you enjoyed these 80s era teens getting into mischief, solving mysteries, this is the game for you, because it's so mechanics light and story heavy driven. There's literally five GMs at that table.
Scooby-Doo with Scrappy and Flim Flam put in the 80s, and they're all wearing tracksuits, as opposed to the 70s Scooby-Doo, where they just have the van running around.
Right, so it's a very solid rule set. Recently, they Free League successfully kickstarted a sequel called Things from the Flood, which kind of takes place in the late 90s. So now you're playing, instead of playing the kids in Stranger Things, you're now playing the teens, where the threat of death and bodily mutilation is a very real threat. So it plays as a completely different game. So instead of like, we're kids having adventures, it's like, we're teens and there's a lot of strife between us, and we're still trying to figure out what our bodies are doing, and there's mass murderers around here, and we're the ones that have to figure this out.
Prime gaming adventure.
So it's a bit more like a Scream in that particular sense. It kind of harkens back one of those 90s horror movies where these bad things could be happening.
So is it just the two shows, or I thought you had a third?
Well, we're Dead Sons, Jewel of the South, we'll be recording some stuff for West of Perdition, which is going to be our Things from the Flood series coming up soon, probably next week. We've done some Extra Life content. So I'm part of a Extra Life team, Team WB Fox, which is raising money for Cincinnati Children's Hospital for Fox G1 syndrome, trying to find a cure and treatment for Fox G1 syndrome. We've done some charity streams, which we hit Predation, which is a Cypher system game. We've done some Fifth Ed with that as well. In a month, we're going to be recording some playtest stuff for a game that my friend is doing called Warriors of Eternity, which is sort of a He-Man and She-Ra inspired D20 system game that he's going to be putting out. There's a lot of stuff going on right now, that, but you know, our mainstay, our weekly, you can set your clock by it, is going to be our Dead Sons, and then on occasion we have some bonus content. Recently Free League got the rights to the Alien movie franchise to do a role-playing game, so we did the Alien RPG quick start adventure entitled Chariot of the Gods, which was an 8-part series that was still sci-fi, but a very different tone from Dead Sons. And I would encourage everyone to
check that out. When you say we got the rights, how did you go out and get movie rights again?
So I didn't. Sorry, I apologize. Free League, the publishers of Tales from the Loop, Things from the Flood, Coriolis, they got the rights to the Alien franchise to be able to do a role-playing game, which should be coming out this winter, if memory serves me correctly. But those who pre-ordered the game to be released, they brought out like a 168-page quick start guide for, you know, those that want to kind of look at the rules and learn how to play with an adventure. And the adventure was called Chariot of the Gods, and I ran that as part of the podcast. So I didn't do anything except throw money at Free League to get the game, and then I ran it on the podcast. So that's what I did.
But okay. No, Free League did all the heavy lifting. No, that sounds really cool. It's a, you're going through so much and you're doing so much right now. It's really a lot to take in. So how long have you been doing this? Like, how long have you been creating content?
Creating podcast content, that would have been around September or October of 2017. So it would have been shortly after the Dead Sons Adventure Path came out. Mm-hmm. And we're still running it because, you know, we've got 5 people that we have to coordinate and everyone's got a life and you got to try to get all that figured out.
No, with Starfinder being brand new and Dead Sons being like the first adventure path, how do you get on with, you know, your competition, as it were? Is there another podcast that you respect, shall we say, for what they're doing or their angle? Like, the great thing about this is you could listen to the same show, the same material again and again and again, a completely different story, different DM, different players.
Right.
And, you know, it would be like watching Star Trek or Star Wars over and over again with a different cast. That's the beauty of podcasting. And people can pick and choose their favorite cast or chemistry. And even though the story's different, like the actual script, the adventure, like what they go through, the monster at the end of the hangar bay and blah, 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 you know, is relatively the same. So I'm not asking you to like to plug the competition, but I am curious, like, is there someone else there that you believe is, you know, is doing good with it, you know, other charity work or that, you know, you respect?
I'll be honest, like, I'm at a point in my life where I don't have a lot of extraneous time to be able to listen to some of the others. And our mutual friend at What Do You Do Pods is tracking, I think he's up to 97, 98 different Pathfinder and Starfinder related podcasts.
Yeah, yes. So shout out to Jason Ellis of What Do You Do Pods for grabbing the entire Pathfinder community and posting us on Twitter going, hey, this guy's got a show and it's this episode and that guy's got a show and these girls are doing this. And I love that guy.
Yeah,
he posts everything. Jason's great.
Jason's the best. Yeah. Quote me on that.
Yeah, no, so, I agree. I'm hoping to interview him. I'd like to get my hands on him. We've been talking. The guy is so busy though, but hoping when he gets settled, you know.
And regretfully, that's kind of where I am with my life right now too. I mean, I don't have as much commute time, which was how I was able to ingest podcasts earlier. I had one video game related podcast that I listen to that kind of keeps my schedule busy, you know, and when I get home from work, I've got a wife, I've got a daughter, you know, I've got all these other obligations. So it's kind of very difficult to follow along with those, but I don't view other podcasts as competition really, because in my mind, a rising tide lifts all ships. That's something I learned in school. You know, it's hard to look at all these other things that are doing the same thing as you and say, they're taking off my plate, they're competing with me. people enjoy content, and we kind of push, we push everybody forward. You know, this is, you know, you have your own podcast. I don't view this as competition. We're collaborating. We're learning from one another. We're doing awesome things. And hopefully we, you know, take something from this experience that we can push forward. We're only making ourselves better. Steel sharpens steel.
I truly believe that people take the sort of tongue-in-cheek joke, which is Attack of Opportunity, where I take the opportunity to tell my own story or tell an anecdote while I'm interviewing someone. And yeah, there's a lot of shameless plugging going on, but show me someone else besides Jason Ellis that is, you know, running around interviewing everybody else. Like you said, rising tide. The reason I started podcasting 3 years ago was to try and do Mummy's Mask, and we never got it off the ground. We're still struggling. And I reached out to Rick Sanchez, who's doing great with Find the Path podcast. I love this podcast because, well, he's doing Mummy's Mask, and I just love the whole Indiana Jones thing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, very sheepishly kind of went, hi, this is me, and I have to confess, you know, I am trying to get this off the ground. And technically, you know, would you see me as competition? And I just wanted to reach out. I'd like to interview you, all this stuff. And he said, no. And he quoted exactly what you just said. The rising tide lifts all ships. That's what he believes. And I've been so pleased to meet so many people in the Pathfinder community specifically that think that way. And he, along with Jason Ellis, and like I said, we've also run out of interviewing each cast member and some of the content creators and audio and music producers and stuff that have helped us with our show. Attack of Opportunity kind of ran drive guests. And it's people like Rick, it's people like Jason Ellis that made me realize that I need to shift the focus of this show and use it not just to go, hey, you know, look at me. But the community would like to know more about guys like you, you know, how you got going, how you got started. I'm hoping this show, the guests that I bring on here will inspire other people that are trying podcasting and they get to that point. And you know what I'm talking about, where they're like 3 months in, 6 months in, a year in, and they're really struggling with audio problems, with casting problems. And they get to that, is it worth it? Should I put it down? You know, because it's not going anywhere. And, you know, you got to ask yourself, are you doing this because you love to do it? Are you doing this because you expected to be some sort of overnight, you know, oh, wow, we're doing so great type of thing?
The market's so saturated. I'm under no delusion that my podcast is going to take off anywhere. But I know that I enjoy re-listening to the stuff that we've recorded. I get a good chuckle every single time I re-listen to the sessions and edit them and put them out there. And looking at the downloads, I am providing content to more than just the four people at my table. There's somebody else out there that's getting some benefit from this. And, you know, it's that society thing again. I invest 4 hours of my time at that table and get 24 hours of enjoyment collectively back out of it. And it's just been amplified by this project. And that makes me feel like it's worth it. And I don't get too hung up on download numbers. It's just, there are people that are listening to it. That makes it worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody. I mean, even friends and family. I mean, I've invested a couple grand at this point into all this stuff, you know, and we're still trudging along the barely known. And, you know, my wife asked me, like, if we won the lottery, would you still be doing this? I'd be like, yes. Yes, I would. Yeah. I would dig up Larry Elmore and get him to paint the wall here in the studio. And I would do this, and, you know, bring more people in, that kind of thing. Just because
we don't run ads. We don't have Patreon. We don't have, you know, anytime I ask for money, it's for Extra Life. I've got a few products that we've been selling. Like, I got some dice made. All the proceeds are going to Extra Life. If you want to support us and throw money at our cause, I'm just going to put it directly towards charity. Like, that's not why I'm doing this.
Oh, that's great. Oh, so, dude, I mean, you're a rare breed. So most people have to wait till they make it before they can sort of afford to do that, or they start doing that for exposure. And
this is a hobby that I enjoy. I'm not looking to make a dollar off of it. If I can break even on a few things, that's way more than I anticipated would ever happen. But, you know, that's, you're not going to hear as of 2019, you're not going to hear ad reads. You're not going to hear, you know, get your Bombas socks and your Audible, or, you know, support our Patreon.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Like the
you know, I want to be heard. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to paywall my stuff. So
yeah, the YouTube, the Spreaker stuff, everything we're on, they're all asking us to monetize, and it's like, no, you know, like, we have Patreon, I'll admit, but that's a reflection of, like I said, if the fans really like what you're doing, they're like, here, we want to help, as opposed to jamming and advertising where the big guy wins and you have to get to your 100,000 views to get your first $100 away. It's not worth it. And it turns so many people off that you fill your podcast or something with advertisements. No, like, we won't do it. And I'm actually very pleased to meet you, sir. Someone like yourself that just goes right to, like, your setup Which brings me kind of to my next personal question. What do you do for a living?
So I am actually a pharmacist for a group of federally qualified health centers here in the West Virginia area. Currently help manage about 4 pharmacies at the moment.
Okay, cool. So we have a couple shows under your banner, more on the way. What about, we were just talking about, you know, the numbers and things doesn't matter, but what about you going to a convention or gatherings where, you know, fans can meet you, or you could meet people, other content creators and stuff, you know, doing the hobnobbing and stuff. Like, I'd love to fly to the States and meet, you know, all the fellow content creators and stuff.
Thank you for bringing this up, because
where can we find you?
Well, no. So Charleston, West Virginia has 2 major gaming conventions. This past July was CharCon, CharCon. It is pretty much the gaming convention for the whole state of West Virginia. I was running some Things from the Flood in addition to a Fate Accelerated homebrew that was based off of the John Wick movie franchise universe. And it was codenamed The Continental. That was a good time.
Oh, that's cool. I love the gold coins. I just run around with little gold coins. And
That was my Fate ship. I had some Fate gold coins that I gave the players to use as their Fate ships, if you're familiar with Fate or Fate Accelerated.
So are the players all like the assassins in this world, or different? Like,
yes. So basically it's the, and I hope to actually, I'm working on a expansion / plugin for Fate Accelerated called Those Who Serve. That'll be going up on itch.io here as soon as I get it done. But it will be basically all those notes that I took for this particular game session into something that you could run at home. And you're not playing as John Wick. You're playing as people in the John Wick universe with, you know, all this rich tapestry of, you know, the Continental Hotels and the sommeliers and, you know, all these other, you know, different, you know, dinner reservations and all these other code words.
You're
basically a world of assassins.
Yeah.
But that's what you're doing. You've got, you know, a table of very capable assassins that are taking on this job and making money or whatever. And they have their own problems and troubles and whatever. But
it's got to keep it in the shadows. That's the best part about playing a modern game. It's like you can't really let the public, you know, in on what's going on. It's not like a massive slaughter down at the train station, which could have happened. It's all got to be finesse.
Right.
And, you know, you're going to. Sorry. Yeah. I just love that stuff.
No,
I love
the James Bond
stuff. Like, really cool.
Something I'm currently working on right now, is able to play test at CharCon in 2 weeks, is CharCon Bonus Round, which is a smaller event in Flatwoods, West Virginia. I will be running some Things from the Flood there as well as helping with playtest for Warriors of Eternity and a playtest for a new Hyperlight Drifter RPG that will be coming out in the future.
Cool. Very cool. So where can we find you in social media? Like what podcatchers? Do you have Facebook? I know you're on Twitter, because that's how I found you. And I also found you through Jason Ellis. He has the What Do You Do on Twitter, where, like you said, he does not self-promote. He promotes and gathers podcasts, most of them Pathfinder, Starfinder specific, to let the community know where you could find the rest of us. But where can we find you?
So you can find me on Facebook. Just look for Maximum Pew Pew. You can find me on Twitter at Maximum Pew Pew. You can also find me on the What Do You Do Discord server. I'm pretty active there. I absolutely love that community. So drop by, say hello. I don't get to travel too terribly much. So CharCon and CharCon Bonus Round, if you want to meet up in person, that would be amazing. But those are probably the best ways to get in touch with me if you have any questions or want to check out content. As far as the podcast, all of the major syndicators, so you can find us on iTunes, you can find us on Google Podcasts, any of the major ones, you should be able to find us. If you can't find us, let me know and I'll try to correct that.
Yeah, definitely. Now, like I said, you're self-motivated, you're self-funded, and anything that's coming your way, you are doing great things with, like Extra Life. Do you have any merchandise the fans can buy? Where can we find it? Like a t-shirt or something? And, you know, is that also something that's geared toward a charity? We have a Teespring outlet, Teespring at Rollmongers, and they list, like, plugged right in while you're making your shirts and stuff. I found this lovely list of charities, and they're saying, do you want to take some of your profit and you know, put it towards this? And I'm like, yes, I do. You know, we try to donate to MS. But what about you?
So right now I have one product available that I don't really have a storefront. It's basically just drop me a message and I'll ship it to you. But we've got some custom D6s with the Max Pew logo on the 6. I recently published a Things from the Flood adventure entitled Head, Heart, Hands, Hell, which is a 4-H adventure. I won't spoil anything there, but
okay. It's I was like, oh, is he going to tell us?
No, well, I've ran it, and that's also available on my itch.io store. So if you go to itch.io/MaxPugh, you can check out our Head, Heart, Hands, Hell, and that's also where Those Who Serve will appear once I get that finalized.
Well, tell us about the dice again. Like, how do you get your own custom dice? How did that happen? Can you send me a link?
So you go to Chessex and you tell them, I want custom dice. And the very fine people there will show you all the designs they have.
Oh, so you walked in. This is not like a website where you can...
Oh, no. You can go to their website.
Oh, okay.
There's no Charleston, West Virginia. Good Lord. It's
Sorry.
No, you're good. So, so Chessex has their own website. You speak to one of their individuals over email. They will send you a proof in a ridiculously short period of time. And you can decide how many dice you want from there. And then they, after it was about a 6 to 8 week production time, they gave me this big brick of dice that was amazing to behold. I'm currently selling those for $2 a piece, and $1 of that goes towards my Extra Life campaign. Like
there
I said,
yeah,
in Cincinnati Children's Hospital. I'm, like I said, I published Head, Heart, Hands, Hell. Those will also be $2 a piece. $1 of it will be going towards the Extra Life. And when Those Who Serve comes out, I'm probably just going to go purely digital on that one. Pay what you want, with all proceeds going towards the Kanawha Charleston Humane Society.
Wow. No, dude. Respect. That is so awesome. Well, I'm almost afraid to ask this guy any more questions because he's getting really saintly. We're gonna start calling you Saint Jared. We're just about out of time here. We've been talking with Jared Bailey, known as Jaylee Bly, on Discord, and you can find him haunting, you know, the What Do You Do Discord alongside myself. You can find him on Facebook because of the Maximum Pew Pew. And we do mean like pew pew, pew pew, pew pew. You know, it started with the old joke, of, you know.
Yeah.
Our guy, Matt Witt, found out I was interviewing you. And he loves the name because he's a big Star Wars fan. He's like, oh, I want to be in on this. You know, what time are you interviewing him? Yeah. I'm like 10. He's like, no, I'm not getting up for that. Well, he had a concert last night. He's a singer. So it's just like,
take care of you.
Yeah, it's amazing. I can get him on the show after he blows his vocals out, like on a Saturday night when we do any Sunday work. But I'd like to thank you, Jared, for being on the show and teaching us so much that someone can do with their content. You know, like as you are advancing, as the tide is rising all ships, you are immediately trying to give back to the community, give to an excellent cause at Excellent Life. And I, for one, thank you. And thank you so much,
Jeff,
for being on the show.
Jeff, thanks for having me. You all have a wonderful day.
You too. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I've got to run, and you've been listening to Attack of Opportunity, one of several shows under the Rollmongers Podcasting Network banner. We are produced by Dicewise Entertainment, and you can find a whole bunch of stuff under our banner, but not today. No. You got to go and find and check out Maxim Pew Pew and listen to him on your commute, because Jared, unfortunately, doesn't have time to listen to your stuff. So do him a favor, listen to his stuff during the commute. He's making praying hands. And if you get listening to this in the audio, this is also audio as well as strict video. And we will see you next time.